Welcome to the K-12 Breakdown with Brooks and Bronder, your daily podcast of the top education headlines from across the web. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Susie.
Good morning and welcome to the K-12 Breakdown on K-12 Leaders with Brooks and Bronder. Except today we have a very special guest. Our very own Leo Brehm is with us.
Hey, Mike.
How are you doing this morning, Leo?
I'm wonderful. I'm glad to be filling in here on this fine Monday morning for the other BR member of our K-12 community, Susie Brooks. It's also election day in my little town, so get out there and vote if you're in Massachusetts and your local election is happening today. So that makes a big difference.
All right. Thanks, Leo, and good luck today.
Yes, as I go for my third term as school board member. It's been wonderful to serve my little community, and everyone out there should consider doing it themselves.
Fantastic. Best of luck to you, Leo. See you today in the in-depth. We're going to go into the backlash on AI, which is coming. That's from Education Week. Schools and closing their summer learning gaps. There are four strategies that Rhea Almieta from NYU Metro Center at New York University shares with us. We're going to dive into the qualities of a principal coach and then take a look at governor's priorities for the K-12 education in 2024. And we're going to kick off with that one. Let's see. So this is coming from three different sources: EdWeek, the National Governors Association, and the Education Commission of the States. In 2024, the State of the State addresses, governors across the nation have highlighted several key priorities for K-12 education. According to analysts from the Education Commission of the States and the National Governors Association, six major themes have emerged from these addresses. First is workforce development and career and technical education. Topping the list of priorities is workforce development, mentioned by governors from from 36 states and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Governors praised initiatives that boost dual enrollment participation, apprenticeships, and technical certifications in high-demand trade fields. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem lauded the state's Jobs for America's Graduates program, which teaches employability skills and supports post-secondary planning. When students graduate, we want them to have every opportunity open for them, Noem said. Second most frequently mentioned issue was K-12 funding, with governors of 32 states discussing it. As districts face challenges like declining enrollment and academic recovery needs, governors praised increased state funding and programming and programs targeting specific student populations. Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont commended the state's Learner Engagement and Attendance Program aimed at tackling chronic absenteeism through evidence-based home visits. And this school funding focus comes at a very critical time, as we've shared so many stories about the budget crunch that so many states and districts are going to be under coming into the next school year. Teacher workforce issues and pay are more than half of the governors representing 27 states mentioned calls to raise teacher pay or build the educator pipeline. Washington Governor Jay Inslee proposed special pay incentives for special education teachers, while Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy called for recruitment bonuses of up to $15,000 to attract teachers to the remote state. Investing in our classroom teachers isn't just the right thing to do, Dunleavy said. It'll also strengthen our ability to recruit and retain them in a highly competitive world. Also on the list, early education and child care. Governors of 25 states discussed the importance of early education, including full-day kindergarten, pre-kindergarten programs, and addressing the high cost of child care. Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear called for universal pre-kindergarten for four-year-olds, stating, "We are rightfully concerned about learning loss, so we should address it where it begins." Also on the list, student and achievement and literacy, which was mentioned by governors of 24 states and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Remarks focused on statewide tutoring initiatives, school improvement efforts, and concerns about pandemic-related learning loss. Governors also highlighted early literacy programs, teacher training in the science of reading, and aligning school practices with evidence-based reading instruction. Finally, student health and well-being. Governors of 20 states discussed student health and well-being, including efforts to improve child nutrition, suicide prevention programs, and grants to train more school counselors. New York Governor Kathy Hochul proposed a $1 billion mental health plan, including funds for school-based programs. Focusing on our kids is critical because they're our most precious resource, Hochul said. As the nation's education leaders, governors have outlined a comprehensive set of priorities for the year ahead, addressing issues ranging from workforce readiness to student well-being. The state of the state addresses serve as a roadmap for the policies and initiatives that will shape the future of K-12 education in their respective states. Leo, what else are you seeing coming across your desk this morning?
Yeah, you know, an article jumped out at me from eSchool News this morning, written by Brandon Johnson of USD 259. Of course, we all know what USD 259 is. That's our friends down at Wichita Public Schools, of course. I don't know how we get by with all these USD and ISD numbers, because we all know where they are.
Yeah, we keep track. We have a list, Leo. We keep track of it.
Right, we keep a list, exactly. Anyway, down in Wichita, he was kind of outlining the key qualities of a principal coach, not just an off-the-shelf coach, but a principal coach. So, you know, he started with the value of, you know, as someone who coaches principals in Wichita Public Schools, I've seen how effective principals drive positive change across an entire school. This is extremely true. I've seen many wonderful principals drive the culture and turn culture around. It is wonderful. And he follows that up right here, where he talks about they create collaborative and supportive learning cultures, attract high quality teachers, and promote strong student outcomes. So, and he goes into some principles around this. So first off is principal coaches make a big difference, especially now. School leaders continue to face big unknowns, including a lack of funding, a student mental health crisis, chronic absenteeism, and a lack of student engagement. At the same time, the school environment that has been affecting teacher retention has taken its toll on administrators as well. Most principals hold their positions for only 4 years, and veteran leaders are leaving the profession at higher rates. And I think you and I have both seen that, Mike, and many of our network have been reporting this. I'm seeing it live in my local communities as well. You know, what are those key factors that we're losing out when they do leave, right? What are we missing besides longevity and understanding of the culture? You know, guide, don't prescribe. You know, mandates have a role in districts, but their impact is often limited. Instead, effective principal coaches understand the importance of showing principals how to encourage teacher ownership of change. And I've seen this in my own professional career as well. I mean, you can bring people along, but you can't make them go, right? And so I think there's a big collaboration side of that that he dives into this, you know, that Brendan really reviews. Commit to learning communities, says the next one. You know, we all learn better together. It creates psychological safety. When coaching principals, I look for opportunities to build professional learning communities that connect leaders. You know, this is not a new concept, and it's something that has weathered the test of time amongst all of our education jargon that we're used to. I think PLCs has been a one of those you know, factors that continues to shine through, you know, when trying to institute change and improve growth amongst a learning community as a whole. So play an active role. A great principal coach demonstrates that impactful leaders lead by doing. When we adopted the Modern Classroom Project model, my fellow district leaders and I were among the first people to take the program's training. As the initial training cohort, we could understand and think about the change, not just from the perspective of introducing it to a building, but as people who would use the model every day. So that's an interesting model, and that's a huge undertaking for the Modern Classroom Project. I'm very familiar with that project. And, you know, in Wichita, they must have really embraced it. It's going to be interesting to see what the outcomes were. But the model they're using, trying to institute something like that, I'm very excited to hear how that turned out for them. But again, a strong trait for any modern principal today. So, and he concludes kind of saying helping principals develop leadership skills can build thriving school environments. I've seen it firsthand, he says, in my district, by investing in support like principal coaches, districts can make that road easier and ensure there are more leaders who can help students and teachers grow. I couldn't agree more. So great article there, Mike. Turn it back over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Leo, and appreciate your personal experience with all of that as well. I know you've spent a lot of time in district and have your firsthand experience with each of these ideas as well. Let's see. Elsewhere, the K-12 Dive underscores the importance of structured and stable learning environments for early childhood su success, both at school and at home. You can find a link to that article on k12leaders.com/breakdown. And let's see, Tech and Learning also has a headline here. They explore what teachers need to know about the science of reading and the intense debates surrounding the topic. That harkens back to the first article we read around states' priorities for education, and the science of reading has certainly been coming up a lot here on K-12 Leaders. And let's see, here we go. There's another article we're going to dive into from Education Week, and this is on the backlash on AI, three early lessons for K-12 education. And this is
Backlash, really? Come on,
already.
already. What are they worried about? The AI taking over?
Who could dream of such a thing?
I know.
This is by Allison Klein of Education Week. And we'll dive into this one. Figuring out how to navigate a world increasingly dominated by AI isn't just a job for technology leaders. State education chiefs and agencies they lead must figure out how to make the most of AI's potential to improve teaching and learning while steering around problems like the tech's propensity to perpetuate society's biases and amplify misinformation. State education leaders' work is complicated by potential political landmines. From some teachers' fears that AI tools could replace them, to parents' concerns that robots are making decisions about their child's education. Three state chiefs, Michelle Blatt of West Virginia, Yon Ebert of Nevada, and Chris Reichdahl of Washington, offered their best advice on working through some of those issues at a March 21st panel held at the Council of Chief City School Officers, in the annual legislative conference in Washington. Here are some key takeaways. States can play a role in helping teachers understand what AI can do and what it can't. AI-powered tools may help educators whip up a lesson plan on iambic pentameter or create a quiz on the solar system, but they're no substitute for a teacher. If we learned anything during the pandemic, we learned that it's important for a live teacher to deal with students and for that those relationships to occur, Blatt said. States must emphasize the fact that this is not just about replacing our teacher. This is not about replacing our teachers. It's about giving them more tools to better meet the needs of their students. And teacher preparation programs need to expose pre-service educators to AI before they enter the classroom. Also, generative AI can help state education departments make decisions. Blatt has already used an AI-powered tool to help craft a charter school funding policy for her state, and I sent it over to legal, and they were like, "How'd you do that so efficiently?" she joked. Ebert of Nevada talked about her state's new method of funding schools, which is informed by a digital tool from Infinite Campus, a technology campus that sells student information systems and other data repositories tools. And so the Silver State is now able to target money more precisely to struggling schools by considering factors beyond the number of students eligible for free and reduced price lunch, a common metric for deciding who is at academic risk. And we read an article out a week or two back on this as well, and how the changes in free and reduced reporting are going to be affecting state district funding. And so involving AI in that is a interesting strategy. And states need to make the case for why AI literacy is important to parents. Washington State is currently going through the process of revamping its learning standards. A key goal will be ensuring that all students at all grade levels understand AI's power and potential pitfalls. Now, in building AI literacy into its content standards, the state is attacking misinformation and disinformation as a really intentional practice, starting at early elementary school. Building critical thinkers is the bottom line. So Reichdell continues that people will be yelling that the Washington state chief wants 5 years, 5-year-olds learning AI on social media, he said. But he's trying to get ahead of that political turmoil by emphasizing from the get-go that no student will be taught by a robot and no decisions will be made solely through a computer algorithm. So that, again, is by Allison Klein of Education Week. You can find a link to that on k12leaders.com/breakdown, or you can find that on Education Week itself. Let's see. Also in the headlines, K-12 Dive has a piece of setting the stage for early child success with structured and stable learning environments. Tech and Learning explores the science of reading, what teachers need to know. That's by Eric Ofgang. And Tech and Learning also has tools and apps to bring augmented reality into your classroom. Leah, we haven't heard about augmented reality in a little bit, but
I know.
Certainly for the work that you've been doing with XRTerra and others, is starting to come back into the headlines after a year of AI.
I know. Well, you know, I think the AI will have a positive impact on that augmented side of things. I think it's just the tools that are next. I don't think people like holding their phone up in front of their face, like to do the AI part. So we'll see how that works moving forward as we get those devices to get down to the size of our glasses, Michael.
Right. Let's see, Leo, you want to bring us out with your final story here?
Yeah, let's talk. I know it's almost the end of March here, and the summer's just around the corner as everyone is doing the summer planning. But please don't leave out some educational activities. And we've got some strategies coming in as schools can close summer learning gaps with these four strategies brought to us by Rhea Almeida from the She's the research project manager over at the NYU Metro Center in New York University. She covers when it talks a little bit about summer learning, she says the benefits are well documented about summer learning. Students who consistently attend well-planned and high quality programs achieve higher scores in math and ELA arts testing. They also earn higher ratings from teachers on their social and emotional skills. Research also shows that students from low-income and minority backgrounds are less likely to attend and benefit from summer learning programs than their affluent and white peers. So they did a deep dive into this on the spending. It says that the Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Fund, or ESSER, this fund infused states with almost $190 billion, and 20% was allocated to recovery, including summer programs. So there's been opportunity to do a lot of research in this that this article covers. And they did this in partnership with the Wallace Foundation, the district's summer learning network, implemented by the nonprofit development organization FHI 360. Of course, we don't know what FHI means, but we know that's got a full wide view at 360 degrees. A team over at the Center for Policy Research and Evaluation at New York University is studying how districts implement high quality summer programs with an eye toward equity. So we analyzed the 2022 summer planning documents from 26 districts and identified four stages that they're using to make programs more equitable. So, in those four stages, I'll just briefly cover these: strategically targeting students. So, obviously, using data to identify these. So, what they dive into is that they found that half the prioritized students who need academic and behavioral support, 42% mentioned English language, and 35% of those are students with disabilities. So they want you to, if you're going to target this in a smaller scale in your districts, start by targeting your areas using data. And then reduce barriers to access for students with access programs outside the regular school day in an equitable way. Simple accommodations such as transportation are key. And I think we all know that, and some of the barriers to that, what the cost of transportation today, but they can make a big difference in targeting funds at those. Design courses for specific student populations, you know, and I think this is takes a page right out of product management, Michael. I think, you know, targeting what students need and packaging it in a way that they can digest is very helpful. You know, especially in those environments that they might need the idea of students learning best when they feel a sense of safety and belonging. And by affirming and nurturing their unique identities of students, districts can make summer programming more equitable and accelerate learning. So I'd like to see some of these broken down in the future on a kind of a how-to. But the next one here is engage the families in the process, right? Engage families in planning and programming. The article does a good job of just outlining, you know, engaging on how to get what the families need to get their students to engage in this type of learning over the summer. And what are some of the programming that they're interested in? You know, you tell them they're going to go to math camp. That doesn't sound very much like much fun, but if it's going to be, you know, sending a rocket to the moon camp, that might involve some mathematics, they might be a little more apt to say yes and sign up for that and engage. So, great article here out of New York University. I'm not sure though, I might want to attend the office party at the Center for Policy Research and Evaluation, but I'm sure they're doing wonderful work over there at NYU. So,
That's great. Thanks. Thanks, Leo. That so much of that echoes the work that the Learning Accelerator is doing with their data advocacy resources that we have packaged on K-12 leaders as a professional pathway. That's a free resource that helps people understand how they could perhaps tailor a course directly to a specific student population or make decisions based on the data that districts have available.
You know, Mike, I was wondering where can I find this once it's recorded? Where can I find this on K-12 Leaders?
So the K-12 breakdown, Leo, is available wherever your podcasts are sold. Well, really just Apple Podcasts and Spotify, but also on k12leaders.com/breakdown. We'd love to have you join the conversation by registering at k12leaders.com. And you're welcome to dive in and comment on any of these stories or more that you've heard here. We are a professional learning community for K-12, and we welcome voices for educators across the country. So that about wraps it up for today, March 25th. This has been the K-12 Breakdown with Bremen Bronder today. Susie Brooks will be back with us tomorrow. And until then, have a great day at school and make good choices, everybody.
Absolutely, make great choices and remember to vote and eat your vegetables at lunch.
All right. Thanks, Leo. We'll talk to you later.